The household of Lazarus, Martha, and Mary is not exactly low profile in those parts. You must know that people who have died and have been decently laid to rest in their family tombs do not generally walk out alive. But Jesus told his friend Lazarus to emerge, and he did. He hobbled out, trailing grave wrappings, fresh as a daisy, which was beyond surprising. After all that time, and it was then that everybody really started to take notice. They may not have the long lenses of the paparazzi trained on their place, but local people, as ever, keep their eyes open. Although the family has lived there for generations, the home of Lazarus, Martha, and Mary is a source of interest and speculation. They have more gatherings than you might expect, not just the usual family and religious celebrations. People come and go, sometimes at odd hours, especially when Jesus is visiting. Officials come in between times asking questions, and they are rumoured to report back in high places. So tongues wag, and news and rumour travel fast. People are saying it's only a matter of time before something gives, something happens. But nobody can quite imagine what it might be or what to make of the goings-on there. The smell of a celebratory meal being prepared and cooked for the unsettling visitor and his friends is not uncommon. They take the smoke, the spices, the herbs, in their stride. But an unexpected and extraordinary scent assails the neighbours' noses. This is not just a gentle hint of expensive Himalayan exotica. This assaults the senses. Musky, earthy, rich. It grabs them by the nostrils. It transports them, immersing them in memories that they thought had vanished. It's unavoidable, it's powerful, and it is far too much in so many respects. Inside the dwelling, what's been going on is even more unsettling, were they to know it. Jesus, the guest of honour, is a wanted man, and not in a good way. Everyone knows that. He has been welcomed, honoured, and cared for, despite his bunch of rather suspect followers. They treat him with a deference that most decent people would find excessive. He reclines at dinner with Lazarus and his other friends as Martha serves the food. But suddenly they are all overwhelmed by the scent. From the large bottle of oil of nard, which Mary pours on his feet. They watch, stunned, silent, as she lets her hair down and she wipes his feet with her hair as the room fills with the heady fragrance. They become aware there is no longer just uncertainty in the air, but there is menace and danger. The authorities' suspected plan to arrest Jesus becomes all too real in that moment. after the silence, indignation. Judas, the group's treasurer, is outraged. Even though it's not the disciples' money which has been spent. Whatever his motives are, he looks mean and out of his depth as he tries to reduce everything to a ledger. He understands ledgers, but he misses the point, which is more tragic and more redemptive than he can know. And thus the stage is set for Palm Sunday, for the events of Holy Week which follow. This passage, I think, is so rich that it too threatens to overwhelm us, just as the people in Bethany were overwhelmed by all the assay of their senses that day. Because we know that each of our senses has special properties. Sight helps orientate us accurately in the world. Hearing is about speedy and accurate communication. And maybe the last sense to leave us at the end of life. Touch is about safety and relationship. But taste gives life its savour, as some of us have become even more acutely aware recently. But smell is the sense which plugs us most directly into memory and emotions, just because of the way we are wired. In this passage, we are aware of everything at work together. There is multi-sensory overload, we might say. And if we are wise, we might wonder why. What is it all about? There are sights, smells, there is drama. It is all too much. It turns everything we thought we knew upside down. But when that happens, we have the opportunity, the need, to interpret and to experience things differently. Otherwise, nothing makes sense. We are to know the place for the first time. Because this is not the same old, where things only change slowly, and there are protocols and customs to be observed. This feast at Bethany turns everything we thought we knew upside down and inside out and shakes it around, including our own preconceptions. Sometimes Jesus himself does things which shock us. On this occasion, we are shocked by what he allows to be done to him and the way he interprets. He understands what Mary is doing and why. And he affirms her a woman. The others have no clue really what's going on, even though they sense the impending danger and the extraordinary nature of the moment. What she does is tender, loving, and perhaps above all, prophetic. We know that it's a beautiful gesture, even if we don't understand it fully. Whereas poor Judas knows the price of everything, but he is revealed to know the value of nothing very much. He is shamed and disillusioned. Mary's prophetic symbol, symbolic anointing of Jesus, shows us that we can't understand what's happening, unless we too can see in a new way. Perhaps we may have understood how things worked in the past, but it now seems entirely inadequate. It is not enough, as becomes increasingly obvious during the darkness, the drama, and the tragedy which follow. As we try to make room for this in our hearts and minds, we might listen to some of those words from Isaiah, which we heard earlier. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. And the only wise response to that is for us to watch and to pray during the coming week.